It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, the tropical, the athletic Jesse Granger.
Got a little more color than usual right now.
Jesus, yeah, you do. It's weird to see Jesse Granger with a color other than pale white. Like, it's weird. I'm not going to lie. Like, and it's funny because this past weekend, I took a little mini break too, and I got some sun. I'm not going to say exactly where I was because, well, when I tweet out a picture, like a nondescript picture, just of where I am, and I don't, like, say, hey, I'm at this location. A follower, a listener on Twitter was just like, I know exactly where you are, and said what the location was. And I'm like, geez, man, how do you people know this stuff?
I know.
How are they so in tune? It was just a picture of a sunset.
Oh, this isn't even like a business or
anything? No, there was nothing. It was the Pacific Ocean.
Wow. That's good.
And a sunset. And this dude's like, yeah, I know exactly where that is.
When I was in San Diego for the AHL playoffs, I think I did something similar. And a guy was like,
sunset
called
peak.
The exact beach I was at.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, wow, impressive.
That's exactly what happened to me because I was in San Diego.
Oh, okay. Mine was not sunset. It was the one with the big warship, whatever that one is, the Midway, the USS.
Well, the Midway is the script. Like, it makes.
No, but my picture didn't have the boat.
Really? It didn't.
It just had rocks and water. And they knew which rocks those were.
We went to the Midway, which was pretty cool, but that was like our last stop.
Did you go on the boat?
We didn't. We didn't because we got there. It was too late.
Ship, I guess. I guess I shouldn't call it a boat.
Yeah, dude, it's massive though. Like, that's pretty crazy. San Diego's fun, man. It was cool. It was really, really cool. Really nice, laid back. Beach was awesome.
Yeah,
the water was great. Like, temperature was fantastic. So,
it's good to get all that out. Like, I timed that vacation so that it would be right before hockey ramps up, and it's like perfect timing. Came home today, went to the golf course, got to see the players out there, and tomorrow we'll be talking to George McPhee, and then boom, from there we basically don't have a day without hockey until May.
No, you did it right, man. So talk about your trip. How was it?
It was awesome. So I did a cruise out of New Orleans, which was cool because you could, like, I could have docked out of Orlando and like Texas and all these different places, but I wanted to see New Orleans. I'd never been there. Mm-hmm. So I got to spend a day in New Orleans before the cruise, and then when the cruise docked, I got to spend another day in New Orleans, which was Saturday. So I got to hang out on Bourbon Street and watch college football with Southern college football fans,
yeah.
And it was freaking awesome. So just that part was cool. Obviously, the cruise ship is awesome. That was the first time I'd ever been on a cruise ship. Drank way too much, but it was fantastic. Did like the private beach thing in Cozumel. Drank way too much there. Got to see Mayan ruins.
I'm noticing a theme here.
For those that the one day I did not drink. Well, I didn't drink in the day. I drank that night. But for those that don't know, I'm like super big history nerd. I minored in history in college. I love history. Love watching all those documentaries and stuff. So I got to do the Chichen Itza excursion in the Yucatan. So like an hour and a half drive through a jungle in Mexico. And then you get to see all these ruins from the Mayan village, basically. And Chichen Itza is like the center of the Mayan civilization. It was really, really cool. I had a blast.
The best part about, I think, your vacation is you did it on the last week/weekend where you were essentially free.
Yeah, it was cool. I think maybe next summer I want to do it earlier because summer did drag.
You should probably split it up into two.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? Like, I kind of split mine up into two, like one big vacation and then one like weekend excursion. But, you know, you got to stay sane, right?
Got
and
you.
And we're in a situation right now where it's all hockey all the time from now until, like you said, mid-May, potentially mid-June, actually really July. Yeah. And then there's rookie camp after that, so really August.
It's July, yeah. And then the one thing for me was just not being on Twitter.
How did you like that?
I intentionally – so, like, the cruise ship was trying to push Wi-Fi packages on me. Oh, for only $14 a day, you can have Wi-Fi. I'm like, I paid all this money to come on here to not have Wi-Fi.
Right.
I'll pay you extra to not to make sure nothing gets to me. I don't want any texts. I don't want Twitter. I don't want Instagram. I want no notifications on my phone. And I did. It was like, I think 5 days. I did not send a tweet for 5 days or something like that.
So wow.
I think that's probably the longest since like I started my Twitter that I've gone without tweeting, I think.
You know, it was funny because when we went on our trip, I got a lot of cross-eyed looks when I was like, yeah, we're driving with two young kids. I can't send a tweet while I'm driving.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like I didn't want to be connected for those 2.5 weeks, and I wasn't very connected, and it was incredibly gratifying coming back and just being like, okay, the world didn't end. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
That's Twitter and social media is such a part of our jobs that we often get into these little mindsets where we have to be checking, we have to be producing content, we've got to send a tweet, we see something and we have to jump in on this. And then you remove yourself from that and then you come back and your audience is still there and the people that interact with you are still looking forward to hearing from you. It makes it a lot easier, I think, to appreciate that part of our job, because Twitter can be a battlefield at times, and it's nice to step away from it, but it's also nice to get away from it long enough to want to come back to it.
My girlfriend thinks I'm on Twitter way too much, so it's probably safe to say I'm on Twitter way too much.
You are.
But it was nice to get away from it, and like you said, you kind of hit it on the nail on the head. Like, you feel like I have to be on Twitter, and if I don't, the world will end. And if you go 5 days without doing it, you kind of realize, like, oh, it's all right. Like, if I don't tweet something out, the world's not going to end.
Yeah, it'll still be there. Yeah. It'll be there when you get back. Like, it's and that's something that I think, you know, over the course of the first 2 seasons of the Golden Knights, I completely lost track of. Like, every day, oh, I got it. I have to tweet something. There's got to be something that I can throw out there. And you know what? Sometimes I don't need to be on Twitter.
Yeah, and I think it was, like you said, perfect timing. Now we're back, getting ready to head to Anaheim here in a couple days. Well, Irvine, technically. We're going to Southern California.
So don't say Anaheim, because if you do, and you just did, so you're going to hear about it on Twitter, because, again, Twitter is the bane of our existence and the best thing that's ever happened to us, you will be told multiple times, hey, idiot, it's not Anaheim, it's Irvine, and because you have bad opinions about the Golden Knights, I don't think you know geography.
Yeah, I have never been to Irvine. I've been to Anaheim a ton of times, only for Golden Knights games against the Ducks. It's the first time I've ever been to Anaheim. I've never been to Irvine. How different are the two? You know SoCal way better than I do. How different are the two cities? Are we talking?
I mean, they're 15 miles. They're 15 miles apart.
Is it Henderson and Vegas?
It's essentially right. Okay. Like it's Irvine is nearish enough to Anaheim where if you made a mistake and you booked a room in Anaheim, you'd still be able to cover the tournament.
Luckily, I booked it in Irvine, but that's good to know.
Well done.
I'm really close to the rinks, and I'm excited to see those rinks. City National Arena is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best practice facilities in the entire NHL. I got to see Edmonton's, which is also about the same age as City National. I think it might be a few months older, and it was phenomenal. It's actually connected to to Rogers Arena, the Oilers. So I like seeing other setups that other teams have. I've also seen some setups that are terrible. but I've heard that Anaheim's practice facility is just – it's the newest one, and usually the newest one is going to be the best one, and then someone will outdo that. But there's – what from everything I've heard is just insanely awesome, so I can't wait to see it.
Well, you're going to be there flying solo. At least I think you're the only one that I know that's going. We are not going. We're not going to be in Irvine. We're not going to be in Anaheim. We're not going to be in any part of Southern California. But the Golden Knights are going to be broadcasting on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. They're going to be broadcasting all three of the games from Irvine. So Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday. So make sure you tune in to Fox Sports. And just a programming note for anybody that tunes into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, the Tuesday show will be preempted because obviously the game would be on at the time of our show. So next week, you only get 4 days of Frank and myself.
Yeah, you get it on. You get those games on. They're doing a great job with. They've got them on the radio. They're going to have everyone calling it, and then they've. I think the Ducks are going to stream them like the Golden Knights did last year.
Nice.
So you can find them online if you if you're not making it out there to watch. Should be fun.
So let's get into it then, because I think the big theme on this show is going to be the rookie showcase. It's going to be the rookie camp, and what we think might be the biggest storylines going into the next 6 or 7 days. Right.
Yep.
I think number one, and it's got to be talked about because here we are, rookie camp opens tomorrow, and as we speak, Jimmy Schultz does not have a contract. And you wrote, you tweeted out a little bit about it. Ken Bulkey, Sinbin.Vegas, wrote an article about Jimmy Schultz and the situation that he finds himself in. And it's fascinating because Jimmy Schultz needs a contract. And I think he needs one in the next couple of days in order to stake his claim to that open spot on defense. If he misses a lot of camp, I do not think he's going to be able to make up enough ground or separate himself or show that he's better than everyone else in order to lay claim to that spot.
100%. I mean, that's the story right now of camp is possibly the best rookie defenseman on this team not going to be there, and are they going to be picking from who's left? I think sometimes George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon outsmart themselves. These guys are obviously, they know what they're doing. They're great talent evaluators. They've brought in a ton of talent. They get guys on good deals because they use leverage correctly. William Karlsson's a perfect example.
Right.
They used all their leverage against William Karlsson and got him to sign for 5.9, which is nowhere near what he should be making.
No.
They've done this continually. Sometimes I think, well, don't use your leverage. Like, they have, okay, right now they've got so much leverage on Jimmy Schultz because if you're Jimmy Schultz, you have to sign because
there's nothing you can do.
Your only chance of playing in the NHL this year is to get this contract done, show up to camp, play better than Nick Hague, Zach Whitecloud, Jake Bischoff, Dylan Coughlin, outplay those guys and get a job. He knows that if he doesn't sign this contract the next couple days, he's not going to be playing in the NHL this year. So the Golden Knights have him under immense pressure. But why? Why are you squeezing this kid? Just pay. Like, that's the thing. The difference in this contract is not William Karlsson difference. This isn't a difference in $2, $3 million a year.
Right.
This is very, very, very small numbers.
So, and it's we should be careful to point out that when you can use leverage and you can squeeze a guy into a more team-friendly number, that has its merit, as it did with William Karlsson. Yeah, having him at that deal.
Alex Tuch, they got him at a phenomenal number.
It gives you more leverage to make this a better hockey team. But when it comes to Jimmy Schultz, when it comes to the amount of money that we're really talking about here, which is going to be, what, $100,000 or $200,000,
yeah,
maybe? Like, that's what we're talking about?
I honestly think the difference in this, I think the holdup in the negotiations isn't an AAV thing. I don't think this is a money amount. I think it's a term? I think it could be term, but I think it's more which years are one way and two way. You just saw Jake Bischoff's contract that he signed, and
right,
it's, I think the first 2 years are one way, and then the next year is two way or something like that. I can't remember the exact details right now, but a portion of the years are two way contracts and a portion of them are one way contracts. And obviously, if you're a player like that, you want a one way deal because that means I'm getting paid NHL money.
Right.
I'm getting whatever it is, $800,000. I'm getting $900,000 guaranteed no matter where I play.
Right.
Or you can get the deal where you get $900,000 in the NHL or you get $60,000. That's a huge difference. So I think the difference is Jimmy Schultz wants one ways on certain years. They want two ways. And I also think it's how much money he's getting paid in the AHL if he does get sent out. I think it's like, but these are so small and insignificant.
And it's worth pointing out, too, that with Jimmy Schultz, this was a guy that was highly, highly sought after. As many as 30 offers on the table.
Yeah.
30.
Yeah. No, there were
every team.
Except for one, and it was Montreal, I think.
Which just goes to show you how stupid the Montreal Canadiens are at times. But
he was in the Canadiens camp, and I guess they thought he doesn't have NHL potential. But
which,
whatever.
Again, great evaluators of talent they are up in Montreal. The point is, this is a kid that likely would have, if he chose another organization, wouldn't even be in this spot, wouldn't even be in this predicament. He would have probably already had everything taken care of. It's much the same way Will Butcher did, right? And I think that's kind of the thing. With Jimmy Schultz, he chose Vegas because He saw an avenue to play in the NHL here, but he also chose Vegas because he wanted to be here, because he thought that Vegas gave him a better shot than every other organization that had an offer in front of him. And yep. Now he's in a situation where he's realizing Vegas is going to play hardball with me because, let's face it, he's not a proven NHL talent. He played one game. He showed a little bit of something in that one game, but the reality is for Jimmy Schultz, he needs to play in the NHL this season, more than likely, because if he doesn't, it's going to just set him back further and further and further. And that's going to affect his next contract.
And he's not Nick Hague. He's not 20.
Exactly. He's making up for lost time, really.
He's older than Alex Tuch. He's older than Shea Theodore. He's older than William Carrier. And talking to people close to Jimmy Schultz, this isn't recently. This is back when the season first ended. I was curious, what makes you choose the Golden Knights as a free agent, as a college free agent? And basically the answer I was given was the vibe around the league and the vibe around college players is Vegas is where you go to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Because George McPhee has made it very clear he likes to develop his players slowly. He likes to develop them the right way. And I think players around the league agree Vegas develops players correctly, and it's an attractive location to go if you're a young player. It's why Zach Whitecloud signed here. It's why Dylan Coughlin signed here. It's why Jimmy Schultz signed here. Now, how many times can you sign a kid, then hardball him into a extended holdout in camp, and then he misses out on a roster spot? How many times do you have to do that for all those college free agents to say, yeah, maybe Vegas isn't that great, and now you can't get these kids?
Well, the especially when, and I'm going to go back to Will Butcher for a second. Will Butcher in a very similar spot to Jimmy Schultz. Will Butcher ends up in New Jersey and playing a huge role with that organization, with that team, and really doesn't have to struggle to get to a contract agreement. So it would be wise, I think, for Jimmy Schultz and the Golden Knights to come to some type of agreement here. Jimmy Schultz needs to be in camp, and he needs to be in camp early, because the guys he's competing with aren't the guys that are going to be in main camp. They're the guys that are going to be in camp right now. Mm-hmm. You talked about it, right? The defenseman for the Golden Knights in rookie camp and for the rookie showcase: Xavier Bouchard, Dylan Coughlin, Connor Kokorin, Nicholas Hague, Caden Korkzak, Braden Paekel, Jimmy Schultz, Zach Whitecloud. So his competition is all going to show up tomorrow, and he's not.
Well,
and that's a problem.
I hope they don't sign a contract before this podcast comes out.
Jeez, that's going to suck, isn't it?
Well, because I will say this. We've been painting this as very negative, and it is. If he misses camp,
well, it's more so negative for him.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, the Golden Knights, from their perspective, okay, if we can't come to an agreement with Jimmy Schultz, well, Nick Hague's good, right? Dylan Coughlin could be good. Jake Bischoff is good. Like, we've got guys that can do it. If Jimmy Schultz came in and blew us away, that'd be great, but we still have other pieces that we think we're comfortable with. So from the Golden Knights' perspective, it's really not that big of a risk. It's everything for Jimmy Schultz.
Is Zach Whitecloud on that list?
Zach Whitecloud is on this
list.
Okay,
yeah. For some reason, I missed that name. I'm like, what the hell is he not doing there? I know Bischoff is not playing.
He's not,
in the rookie games, which is interesting. But anyways, back to my, like, from what I've been told, Jimmy Schultz has been skating at City National with all of his Golden Knights team. So, like, Marchessault, Zikov, and Englin were the first kind of three to get together, and they basically all three stayed here all summer.
Zikov,
Zikov, Marchessault, and Englin, yeah. And I've been saying this all offseason on Twitter. Zikov, if he doesn't make this roster, it's not for a lack of effort. This kid is busting his ass this offseason.
Good.
He has not left City National Arena trying to make this team. So, anyways, the first three were kind of those guys: England, Marchessault, Zikov. And then a few more gathered. I was talking to Marchessault this morning at the golf course. He said this week was when all the guys basically poured back in, mm-hmm. and they've got full team practices almost run by the players still. But what I've been told, Schultz, and usually guys in hold, if you remember, Shea Theodore was not skating with the Golden Knights. He actually wasn't even in Vegas during that holdout. He stayed up in BC. Jimmy Schultz is skating on the ice, which is risky.
Yeah,
skating 100%. Without playing, even though they're a voluntary practice, it's risky to skate and play without a contract. And he's doing that right now, and he's here, and he's so basically he just needs that contract to be signed like 10 seconds before camp starts, and he can step right on the ice and he's fine. This isn't like a case of, okay, we need to sign him now so that in 2 days he can fly here or whatever. Like he's ready to go. They just need to ink it. And what could be this could be the case. Maybe Schulte and his agent are holding out for more money. And they know when the clock strikes midnight, when he has to be in camp, they're just going to take whatever the Golden Knights are offering.
Right.
And maybe the Golden Knights know that, and they're just saying, we're just going to wait him out. He's going to have to take it because he knows. So you know what I mean? Like, I don't think this is going to be a long holdout. I think this is...
So you think...
I think it either gets done at the very last second or maybe after the off-ice... So tomorrow's off-ice workouts.
Yep.
They're just going to test him. They're going to do physicals. Maybe he sits that out hoping the Golden Knights... throw something else in there. I don't know. But I do not expect Jimmy Schulte to hold out this long because, like I said, the difference in the money amounts in this are so small and the ramifications for his career are so big. It just would seem stupid to miss out on a year of NHL play possibly for small percentages on a contract. So I don't expect this to be an issue. I think it gets resolved either right before camp or right after it starts.
Do you think that by the time we speak to George McPhee tomorrow, we might also be getting an announcement that Jimmy Schulte has signed a contract?
That very well could be. I don't know, but I just – the feeling I get from – like I've been talking to Jimmy Schulte's side the whole time, and I just – they haven't told me this is the case. This is just me reading between the lines. It just doesn't make sense to me for this to be a long holdout. This isn't the Shea Theodore situation where he's trying to get a – like Shea Theodore signed a 7-year contract, like a massive contract. This isn't – like Jimmy Schulte's getting like a 1 or 2 year deal here probably.
Yeah, I think and we've talked about this throughout summer. I've talked about it throughout summer on the Golden Knights Insider Show. That spot to me is Jimmy Schulte's to lose. Like
yeah.
From his age, from the accolades coming in, I get that he's a little bit older than most of the guys that he's competing against, but
that gives him
an advantage. That works to his favor, especially when it comes to an organization that's a little bit shy in pushing younger kids to the forefront and giving them more responsibility. So to me, Jimmy Schulte should be better than everyone else at camp. Jimmy Schulte should fit in well if he's paired with a player like Derek Englund or paired with a Nick Holden or paired with a more stay-at-home defensive-oriented guy that can help him come along and bring along his game. So from the fit on the ice, I like Jimmy Schulte's game, and also from his age and maturity and experience, I think that it's his job to lose. But the thing is, we don't know until we see it on the ice.
Yeah.
We don't.
And the thing is, you talk about experience and maturity, and you're right. He's older. He's played more hockey. But has he played the right hockey?
That's a good point.
He's playing at St. Cloud State, the most talented team in the country. Every night, he's probably playing against guys not as talented as his team. Everyone on his team is usually more talented than the other team. Then you've got Hague and Whitecloud, who are the two biggest threats to him to take that position. And these guys just played an entire season of AHL hockey as the top pairing defenseman. So every night, Rocky Thompson put these guys on the ice against the opposing top threats. And I'm pretty confident in saying the forwards that they're being put against every night are significantly better than the forwards Jimmy Schulte's facing in NCAA hockey.
Yeah, you're probably right. 100%.
So while he's older, it's going to be interesting to see. I can't wait to see this because we got a pretty good idea of what Hague and Whitecloud look like against each other because we got to watch them in camp last year. We got to watch them all season in the AHL. They're playing together. We get to see. We can compare and contrast. You can obviously see Whitecloud's a little more polished. He makes less mistakes. He's a little better defensively. Hague makes the big plays. We don't know what Jimmy Schulte is to those guys because there's nothing really to compare him.
There's no comparable.
He looked great in that Kings game in L.A., the last game of the season. He looked great, but
it was the Kings. Basically an AHL team anyway.
Yeah, the players that the Whitecloud and Hague were going against might have been better than the Kings players for all we know.
Very true.
So the experience factor is not as in Schulte's favor as I think his age suggests.
That's a fair point. The thing that I find interesting and what I love so much about this rookie showcase tournament that we have going on over the weekend is you get to see the game situations. You get to compare guys, not just playing against each other, not just in scrimmages, but you get to compare them against where every other team in this division, or at least the ones that are participating in this showcase, where are the kids with the Golden Knights in comparison to the kids with the Coyotes and the Sharks and the Kings and the Ducks? And what's interesting there is you get to see those moments where a game is in balance and which players are going to step up. And the guy that did it for me last year was Nick Hague, and it wasn't even close.
Best player on the ice
was not close.
And this is including Suzuki, Glass, and Brännström. Remember, they had all those guys back then.
There were big moments, and in every single big moment in every single game, it was Nick Hague first and then everybody else.
Whether it was scoring a goal, whether it was fighting
somebody. 100%.
He was the man, which we keep saying, Schultz. And then I think after Schultz, I think the next name that has been out of my mouth is White Cloud because he's a little older. He's a little more. And then Bischoff isn't even partaking in rookie camp, which to me makes me think the Golden Knights think he's a little bit above those guys. That's just my initial take on him not being at rookie camp. It seems like if you weren't sure if he's good or not, if he's with those guys, you need him to play. They're not playing him. But I think Hague is getting overlooked when that might not be smart because, like you said, last year he dominated this thing. And if he does it again, he's probably going to win the job.
And
he's the most talented.
And it's if Nick Hague can dominate the next couple of weeks, imagine the momentum he's carrying into main camp. Imagine what
preseason. This
organization is saying, okay, you know what? This guy was able to do it against rookies. He's feeling really good. He's feeling really confident. And those are going, that type of play is hopefully going to carry him into the regular camp and preseason. And if he's got that confidence, Nick Hague might separate himself. It's always going to come down to skating, though, with him. It's always going to come down to skating. And with Zach Whitecloud, and it's interesting. And again, this is why these rookie showcase games are so important. There was a game last year where Zach Whitecloud was manning the penalty kill, and I think it was against the Kings, and they had the Kings power play hemmed in to their own zone for the better part of a minute 15, a minute 20 seconds, because every time the Golden Knights would dump a puck in deep, Whitecloud would assess what the Kings had back in their own zone, and he would bark out the orders, and he would get the pressure up the ice. And it's those types of plays that I think endear themselves really, really well to the coaching staff for the Golden Knights. There are going to be small little plays that Zach Whitecloud's going to make that are going to separate him. They're not going to be flashy like Nick Hague, but it's all depending on, I guess, what the Golden Knights really want out of that spot. What do they want? Do they want someone that's going to be incredibly responsible? If they do, probably Zach Whitecloud.
Or
do they
Bischoff.
Want a little bit? Or Bischoff? Do they want a little bit of a risk? Do they want a little bit of offense? If they do, especially when you consider that Colin Miller is the guy that is out of the equation now, then it seems to favor Nick Hague. It seems to favor a little bit Jimmy Schultz. So it's such a crazy, crazy situation because you've got four, maybe five defensemen that I can reasonably see fitting that role, and it really comes down to, what do the Golden Knights want out of that spot?
Yeah, we're going to talk to George McPhee tomorrow, and then we're going to get to talk to Gerard Gallant and the other coaches. And to me, I can't wait to ask all of them and then them to all dodge the answer. what wins the rookie the job? What are you looking for? If you were to tell me, these guys need to do this to be the defenseman that gets this job, they're not going to tell me, obviously. But maybe we can read between the lines. I really want to know because I honestly don't think any of these guys are going to create that much separation to where I don't think at the end of preseason, I don't think there's going to be a clear, this guy is the best. I think it's going to come down to preference. Do you want Nick Hague and will you take some mistakes to get his offensive power play and his dynamic offensive zone time? Or do you just want Jake Bischoff to be good at defense and not do anything on the other side?
But see, here's the interesting thing. Last year in the preseason, Jake Bischoff scored goals.
Wow.
Derek Englund scored. I get it. But my point is, Jake Bischoff won the job, I think, by showing a little bit of extra added layers and a little bit of offensive instincts in certain spots while still being defensively responsible. But I also think that in the grand scheme of this organization, Jake Bischoff could be up with the big club and sit, whereas Nick Hague couldn't.
That makes
whereas
sense.
Other guys can't. Like, it was easier, I think, for the Golden Knights to say, you know what? We're going to keep Jake Bischoff. He's not going to play. We know he's not going to play. That's not going to hurt his development. But if we bring up Nick Hague and he sits, it's going to really hurt him.
Yeah, Bischoff, he did score. I'm trying to look up their stats. I couldn't find it.
It wasn't a ton, but
talking about the AHL.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because that's a huge sample size.
And sure.
I watched quite a few Wolves games, and I'm not sure I saw him touch the puck past the red line.
Come on now.
This guy is – Jake Bischoff is the most defensive defenseman I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, he makes Derek England look like Shea Theodore. Like, he's just completely stay-at-home, does not –
sure.
No, it's not rough because the thing is, if George McPhee and Gerard Gallant are going to base this competition off of defensive ability,
sure.
Jake Bischoff's got the job.
Well – you need more, though, from just a guy that's good in his own zone, right? Like, you need more than just a defensive defenseman.
You need
a guy that can move the puck.
Yeah.
So I guess the main question for me when it comes to Jake Bischoff, and I think what I'm going to pay close attention to with Bischoff, with White Cloud, with some of the more defensive-minded guys, can you move the puck out of your own zone?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if you're going to score. I don't care if you're going to be pinching in and keeping plays alive. Like, the Golden Knights have Shea Theodore. They've got Nate Schmidt. They've got guys that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Even John Merrill, to an extent, can do that, right? What I'm looking for is, are we talking about Jake Bischoff? Are we talking about Zach Whitecloud? They're going to get the puck. They're going to get the pass behind their own net. They're going to look to turn up the ice, and they're not looking to make a play. They're looking to chip it off the glass, because I don't want to see a guy back there that's just going to chip it off the glass and give back possession. It doesn't make any sense,
yeah.
Not in today's NHL. It doesn't necessarily matter what they do in the offensive zone. I want a puck mover. I want a guy that can get the puck out with efficiency and make it so that you put the puck in the hands of Mark Stone and Jonathan Marchessault and William Karlsson and allow your playmakers to make plays.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is Whitecloud. I think Whitecloud moves the puck safer and more efficiently than any defenseman of these rookies. I think he's better at it than Schultz. I think he's better at it than Hague. I think he's better at it than Bischoff. He makes the right play. It's never fancy, but he makes it, and he makes it quick to where there's no, like, man, he barely got that one over. That guy almost intercepted. Like, he just quickly gets the puck, makes the right decision, moves it quickly. That's what he's good at. And he's never going to make any spectacular plays, but he doesn't make mistakes. I remember I tweeted watching the Calder Cup final when they were in Carolina or Charlotte playing the Checkers. After I had just watched the entire series live against the San Diego Gulls, I remember tweeting, like, there was a mistake by Whitecloud. It's possible. I was up until that point, I wasn't 100% sure he was able to make a mistake with the puck. He just does not ever make a mistake. He doesn't make any play. You'll watch an entire game and he'll make 20 passes and you didn't even notice a single one of them because they're pointless. Like, they're just super easy passes. But he doesn't turn the puck over. He doesn't get hemmed in. He doesn't get caught and throw it into the middle of the ice. He doesn't do stupid things with the pucks. So I think that's going to help him in this. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Like George McPhee likes to say, they got a lot of flavors. Each one of these guys is completely different from the others. I can't wait to see what they do. And if they go the route of, we're trying to fill Colin Miller's role, because if they do, it's probably Hague. He's got the shot. He's got the power play. I was asked in a Q&A yesterday on The Athletic, who's my breakout player this year? They wanted me to say, who's the William Karlsson from the first season? I'm like, whoa. That's not happening.
Nobody
that's only scored 9 goals is going to score 43 this year, I promise you. But my pick is Shea Theodore, and that's because with the absence of Miller, and in my mind, I think Hague is a little bit behind Whitecloud and Schultz and Bischoff in development. So I think the person who replaces Miller is going to be a defensive defenseman. So in my mind, all those minutes Colin Miller spent on the power play last year are now being eaten up by Schmidt and Theodore, because they're really the only two options. You can't, unless they're going to put John Merrill on the power play, because you can't put – England's not playing power play minutes. McNabb's not playing power play minutes. It's going to be Nate and Shea. And Shea is obviously the more offensively skilled of the two. I think Shea Theodore plays damn near every power play minute he can be out there for this year.
So I guess
I expect him to be a monster.
I guess the bigger question then is Nate Schmidt is going to log a metric – ton of ice time, because if he's going to be inserted to the power play and he's also going to be one of your most reliable penalty killers, maybe whoever fills that extra role finds himself on the penalty kill, and that again would lend itself to a more defensive oriented player, which I think at that point probably puts you in Bischoff White Cloud territory.
Yeah. So the player they determine that wins this job could have a major impact on Nate Schmidt's role on this team. Because if it's Haig, you say, all right, our power play defensemen are now Shea and Haig, and Nate gets a little bit, like he has the last 2 years. Nate gets in there every once in a while, but he's not a major power play guy. But he's still one of your biggest penalty killers. If it's Bischoff or White Cloud, all of a sudden, it's now your power play defensemen are Nate and Theodore, and Nate gets taken off the penalty kill a little bit, and you put Bischoff or White Cloud or whoever gets on there on that penalty kill. That's why a guy like White Cloud, who played an entire season in the AHL, an entire playoff run, he was playing all those PK minutes. Now, it's not the NHL. It's a huge step up, but I just think he's been prepared. Like, I feel like his journey to this point has groomed him for being the young Derek England on this team.
Good Lord, we have talked ourselves in and out of a lot of different players here.
I'm glad I'm not Gerard Gallant and have to make this decision.
Well, it's a big one, because you're talking about degrees of what does Nate Schmidt do best and how do we maximize his time on ice while also bringing in a youngster and trying to set them up to succeed?
Yeah. We talked to McNabb this morning about bringing in the rookie defenseman, and he's like, we are all here to make that guy's job as easy as possible. That's what we're going to try to do. It's going to be fascinating to see how they pair this, to see if – because Miller played a ton with Merrill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be Merrill and the rookie.
We talked about it, I think, the last podcast. I am on board 100% with you. Give me Shea Theodore and give me John Merrill as a pair. I'm fine with that. I think it'll be okay. Continue with Schmidt and McNabb. That's your best pair. That's what you roll out when you need a good defensive unit out there. And then Derek England and the rookie, or even, I suppose, Derek England.
Don't you say it.
No, I'm sorry. I can't do it. I can't do it.
You were going to say number 22.
I can't. I like the guy but I can't
Nick Holden was the last guy picked for golf today, except for the new guy. They had the new guy out there. What was the new guy's name? I'm blanking.
You were at the event.
I know. They signed him. He's from the Gulls. He was the Gulls captain last year. 6'6" defenseman.
That guy.
Yeah.
It's that guy.
He was the last pick, and nobody that was playing golf even knew who he was. So he was the last pick. But other than him, Nick Holden was the last guy picked. And it was just Nick Holden and the new guy, who's an AHLer, basically, were just standing up there. Even Bischoff went before Holden.
So here... did Tyler go?
No, Jake Bischoff.
No. I mean, did Tyler pick him?
Oh, did Tyler pick him? No. Oh, Tyler bummer. Wasn't there.
If Tyler got first pick, Jake Bischoff would have been number one. It's funny. Okay, so we've spent an inordinate amount of time on the defense, which makes a lot of sense because that's where we know there's an opening.
Well, yeah, and we're looking at rookie camp and like the rookies. I mean, it's Glass and the rest.
Okay, so I'm glad you said that because I think it's Glass and the rest too. But the other names that intrigue me, not so much about rookie camp and the rookie showcase, but I'm really, really going into preseason main camp. What the hell is Nicholas Waugh?
Yes.
How good can he be? And what does that do for the bottom six of the Golden Knights?
Yeah. I think
legitimately.
I think the biggest position battle on this team during main camp is going to be Tomasz Nosek, Nicholas Waugh, Patrick Brown, Valentin Zhikov, all these guys who are they going to be part of this team? Are they not? And it's a couple of them are going to make this squad. A couple of them are going to get sent down to the AHL and have to wait, and they'll probably find their way back up there eventually. But to me, that's the biggest competition in camp is that group of four guys, Patrick Brown, Zikov, Waugh, and Nosek. Obviously, Nosek has the advantage. He's been on this team forever, but it's going to be interesting to see if those guys can supplant him as that fourth line center, because I think knowing Gerard Gallant and the way he treats his players and the way he's loyal to his players, I think Nosek gets the first crack at it.
Sure.
I think if you're Gallant, Nosek is my fourth line center, and Nicholas Waugh or Patrick Brown or one of these guys, Zikov, they're going to have to beat out Nosek to try to take and Zikov's going to play on the wing, but he's fighting for a spot with Carrier and Reeves and all those guys. But yeah, I'm interested to see if Nosek is the best option.
The question that I have in my mind is Tomáš Nosek has never looked better than when he's playing center. And he hasn't been able to play center because Pierre-Édouard Bellemare was here. Mm-hmm. And you understand, I think, a little bit the willingness to let Pierre-Édouard Bellemare go in free agency if you are resigned or reserved to do one thing, and that's move Tomáš Nosek to center, where he's been his most productive, where he's looked most comfortable. But then the question is, now you bring in Nicholas Waugh, who I think is a little bit different in terms of what type of player he is. He's going to be a little bit harder, I think, to play against mm-hmm. than, say, a Tomáš Nosek. Now, if that's what you want out of a fourth line, if you want three guys that are going to batter and bruise you every single time they're on the ice, and hopefully they're big enough and they're quick enough to get in and keep the puck along the boards in the offensive zone for 45 seconds, and then you get a line change and it's more advantageous for your more skilled players, then I think Nicholas Waugh, Will Carrier, Ryan Reeves, I don't know that you can get any more big and bruising than that line, especially if Nicholas Waugh is all he's cracked up to be in terms of faceoffs. Because if you put them in the offensive zone and they win a faceoff and they can expend some of that energy, then it becomes really effective to use them in certain situations. But if you still want a little bit of skill, and if you're looking at Will Carrier as someone that can give you a little bit more from a skill perspective, and you're looking at Tomáš Nosek as someone that can give you a little bit more from a skill perspective, then I think that changes things too. Like, what the Golden Knights have in terms of their bottom six, third line, fourth line, is going to be really fascinating, because we know how good their top two lines are going to be.
They're going to be amazing, yeah.
They're going to be fantastic.
If the top two lines aren't fantastic, this season's going to be bad.
Yes, really, really bad. But the question is, what exactly do you want out of your third and fourth line? And do you have the pieces to put together a third line that's good defensively and can chip in offensively here and there? And then do you have enough in a fourth line to be what they were last year? And that's going to be really hard, because which guy's more like Pierre-Édouard Bellemare? Tomáš Nosek or Nicholas Waugh?
Nosek.
Exactly.
Because he kills penalties. And that's the other thing is Pierre-Édouard, usually fourth liners are penalty killers. The Golden Knights are not putting Ryan Reeves and Will Carrier on the penalty kill under any circumstance.
Sure.
So you need that center. I feel like that center almost has to be a penalty killer. So do you...
Does Waugh kill penalties?
I'm sure he probably did for the Checkers, but are you... Pierre-Édouard Bellemare was extremely important to this team on the penalty kill.
Your point is Nosek's already proven at the NHL level as a really, really good penalty killer.
They trust him 100%. Yeah. Gerard Gallant trusts Tomáš Nosek to send him out there on the PK every night. Waugh is fighting an uphill battle, because he's got to be better than Nosek at 5-on-5 and prove to Gerard Gallant in preseason and camp that he can be a penalty killer. Because Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, 5-on-5, this team's not going to miss him at all. Zero.
Sure.
I don't think this team will miss Pierre-Édouard Bellemare at 5-on-5 even a little bit.
That's an unpopular opinion, but I don't think you're wrong.
Penalty kill is where they're going to miss him bad. And this team has been one of the best penalty killing teams in the league for both years.
So I guess the big question for me, in terms of Tomáš Nosek coming into camp last year, he looked like a guy that could take the next step and
to be a top six.
At least a really solid, dependable third line winger that can score and drive possession. And yes. it never happened. Is that ship gone? Is it sailed? Because I understand. I totally get it. I understand going into camp, it's Brandon Peary, Cody Eakin, or Cody Glass, potentially, depending on what happens there, and Alex Tuck as your third line. Like, I get it. But is it really, really outside of the realm of possibility that if Nicholas was really, really good in terms of he's a fourth line center that wins faceoffs and can kill penalties about as well as, say, I don't know, Tomáš Nosek, and Nosek looks like he can maybe make that jump, is it not more valuable, don't get mad at me, but is it more valuable to put Nosek on that third line, sit Brandon Peary, because you at least can put Nosek on the ice in the third period when you're up?
I like that idea a lot, actually. I don't. I think that could,
like, Nosek, Eakin, Tuck could be a really good third line.
And Gerard Gallant trusts Nosek.
And you would have Brandon Peary as a reserve, as a player that can come in if there's an injury in your top six, even in your third line. Like, that would be a way, if Nosek can take a jump, that is a way for the Golden Knights to solve their depth problem.
Yeah. To me, Brandon Peary is not an every night NHL player. And not just to me, to all 31 GMs in the NHL. Because he
30,
just...
30.
31?
No. Yeah, 31. Found a job here.
Yeah, but for $800,000...
Come on.
You don't pay a guy $800,000 to be an every night NHL player.
One team paid him.
Well, that's because...
I'm just saying.
But you're right. This guy had his best season of his career. He was all... Remember, what? I forgot who it was. Some national reporter was like raising hell when the Golden Knights sent him back down. I forgot who it was. Was it Don Cherry? I don't know. It was somebody.
It was probably Don Cherry.
They were raising hell. This guy got a ton of national attention last year and then became a UFA. And not one single GM was like, we'll take a flyer on him. Not one single GM in the entire league was like, he can score for us. So to me, they've all voted... Brandon Peary can play an important role on a hockey team. But to me, Brandon Peary, at his best role is as soon as someone on a winger on the top six gets hurt, he goes in. Pacioretty gets banged up. He's going to be out five games. Peary plays those five games. He probably scores a couple
three
goals.
Three or four goals.
Playing with Stastny and Stone. And then when Pacioretty comes back, Peary goes right back to the press box.
Sure.
And then a couple weeks later, Riley Smith gets banged up. Put him there. That's, to me, right. Brandon Peary being used as efficiently as he can is the top six. He's the fifth winger for the top six.
And I like it.
Nosek is a better third line every night winger to me.
Even right now, like right now, if it were up to you, you would play Nosek on the third line wing. If Nicholas Waugh is good enough to be a fourth line center.
Yeah, it comes down to, is Nicholas Waugh, like, does he impress?
And this is really, really crazy, I know, but or Cody Glass is really, really good, and you want to play Cody Glass as a third-line center, so then you got Nosek, Glass, and Tuck, and then Cody Eakin is your fourth-line center.
Yeah, I mean, Eakin, Carrier, Reaves is an awesome fourth line.
It'd be great. It'd be great because it's Belmar.
Yeah,
it's better than Belmar.
Yeah, Eakin's
at five
a better
on
version
five.
Of
right.
Belmar.
So I think Tomáš Nosek... going into camp, and we said it last year too, but I feel like he could be the most important Golden Knight going into camp.
Well, yeah, most important as far as...
in terms of the bottom six, in terms of understanding that this team still does have depth on your bottom six.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. For a team that didn't change much this offseason... there's a lot of things up in the air as to like what this lineup's going to look like. It's fun.
So I threw out a little bit of a mailbag questionnaire. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you guys want to know going into rookie showcase, going into rookie camp, preseason, all that stuff. So here are a couple of the questions that we got. We answered... Dave S. at Vegas Ambassador said, we going to sign Schultz? Last burning question of the offseason. I think we kind of answered that already.
Mm-hmm.
Steve LaRusso at Stellar 43, contract situation aside, is the open defenseman slot for Schultz's jobs to lose? I think yes. You think no. That
I think
it's not so much.
I think it's pretty open.
Jeremy Rincon at
That's Jimmy Rincon. He was my photographer at the Rebel Yell at the UNLV school paper.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic photographer.
He says, I have a question. Why did Jesse vacation somewhere tropical instead of a hockey destination? Makes me think he's not fully committed to what he's doing. Please discuss hashtag suck it Granger. And I take offense to that tweet because it's really, really well constructed, but it doesn't have the hashtag on it.
Oh, he just...
He didn't have hashtag suck it Granger, and he should have, because it would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. That's fine.
I went somewhere colder than Vegas.
Chad McVean, Viener 85, other than glass, and I think I know the answer to this for you, is there any other forward that could challenge for a roster spot? If Bischoff is not at the rookie showcase, does he get a spot, or is he skipping to avoid Tyler?
Probably skipping to avoid Tyler.
Okay, so outside of Glass, is there any forward that you think is going to make the team? I'm not saying that there's one from the rookie showcase, but I do think when it comes to the forward position, we've talked about him already. Nicholas Waugh,
Patrick Brown
is another one.
He's a guy who could be like William Carrier's insurance, basically, because William Carrier's going to get hurt. I think Patrick Brown can be William Carrier insurance.
Yeah, so for me, it's Nicholas Waugh. I'm curious to see what Patrick Brown can be. Based on your assessment of the summer Valentin Zhukov has had, I'm curious, really, really curious to see how he comes into camp.
Maybe he's that third line winger with Eakin and Tuck.
What he looks like, and I mean, the guy's got offensive instincts. Everything else needs to catch up to it, though. And if he works his ass off over summer, and as it seems he has, maybe it's the summer where it clicks. I don't know. We'll see.
And I've in my Q&A for The Athletic yesterday, I got questions about a couple people asked about Lucas Elvinus. And he's probably, if you're talking just Golden Knights drafted players, after Glass, it's probably Elvinus is probably the next closest forward. But it's a massive gap between the two.
Yeah.
Just to, a small anecdote for how big this gap is, Elvinus and Glass joined the Wolves at basically the same time last year. There was a couple games left in the regular season. Rocky Thompson put Glass immediately onto the third line, then moved him up to the second line, and he was probably their best player in the playoffs.
Yep.
Instantly.
Yep.
I asked Rocky Thompson why Elvinus didn't play, and he said that was unfair and that position was way too hard to put him in to join a team at the end of the season. Now, he's right. That's a hard position. But Glass did it seamlessly.
Sure.
And we're not even sure if Glass can make this team. So the difference between Glass and Elvinus is huge. I don't think Elvinus can make this team. I think he needs a full year in the AHL playing that power play. He's going to be a power play guy. He's a top six guy. I'm not ready to write him off as a prospect, but he's not ready this year. I think a year in the AHL, getting top line minutes and playing on that power play will do him a world of good. So Golden Knights drafted forwards, it's Glass or no one.
This is Chad's final question. I love it. And just to jump back to why is Jake Bischoff not at rookie showcase? I don't know.
I'm going to ask McPhee tomorrow, and he'll tell me nothing.
Yeah, he'll tell us nothing. I think Jake Bischoff, if I'm reading into it, he's getting as prepared as he possibly can for camp and for preseason. And I think I don't want to risk anything happening during these games where really I feel like I've already separated myself from these guys.
He won the job last year.
He did.
And was with Eric Brännström still on the team.
Right. And that's the thing. I think in Bischoff's mind, that's a risk he's not willing to take in terms of playing in these games. You never know what could happen. He could get hurt.
They got chippy as hell last year. These games were...
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah,
they were AHL, old school AHL brawls. There were six fights. And Keegan Kolesar got tossed. Nick Hague got tossed. These games get heated.
Yeah, and I think that if that's the case, and that's what I'm reading into it, I think that it's probably a good idea for Jake Bischoff to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it works out. And then the last question from Chad, how bad are the Wolves going to be after all these changes? Probably not good.
I was having this conversation the other day, and what I basically said was, if you are a Chicago Wolves fan... It sucks. This season's going to suck. They're going to be terrible. But if you're a Golden Knights fan who is watching the Chicago Wolves, this season is the best season ever. Like, this is, compared to the last two seasons, this season is where Golden Knights fans can really watch, because we're getting to the point where almost everyone on the Wolves is a Golden Knights prospect.
Right.
Guys like, we assume Cody Glass is not going to make this team. I mean, it's going to be close. It's going to be tough. But let's, just for this argument, assume Cody Glass doesn't make the team. Let's say Jake Bischoff makes it. The Chicago Wolves are going to have Cody Glass. They're going to have Elvinus. They're going to have Ron Bier. They're going to have Haig, Schultz, Whitecloud, Coughlin. It's going to be the junior Golden Knights down there. Unlike last year, where the dominant players on that team were Brooks Masick,
Daniel Carr.
Yep. Guys that, you know, don't really have a future with the Golden Knights in the end. Brandon Peary, a great guy. Sorry, not Brandon Peary. Tomáš Hika, yeah. Guys that are really good players in the NHL, but you know they don't have a future. So to answer your question, yeah, the Wolves are probably going to suck because they're going to be starting a bunch of kids who have never played in the AHL.
But if there's a coach in the AHL that can get them to develop, which is, again, the whole point of the AHL is development. Yes, results matter. Yes, you want to win games. Yes, it's nice to go to the playoffs and win championships. But really, how well do these kids develop? That's the question you need to ask yourself.
And Rocky Thompson's phenomenal.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the Wolves are going to be bad. I think they're going to be more fun to watch for Golden Knights fans this year. Less fun if you're a diehard Chicago Wolves fan. It's going to be bad.
Ted Krampus. Glass isn't breaking camp with the team no matter how good he looks, is he? I think Glass has a shot if he's really good.
I completely agree.
He has to be really good.
Yes.
Like, he might... He probably has to be better than Cody Eakin. Like, and it's not like, could he be better than Cody Eakin in 20 games, in 30 games, in 50 games? Like, no, he's got to be better than Cody Eakin and better by a pretty significant margin in camp, to me, in order for him to make the team.
He has to be way better than Cody Eakin, and this is the reason. It's almost one of those situations where, like, you can't win because... Because if Glass out, like if Cody Eakin has an awesome game in preseason, he wins the job. If Cody Eakin has a bad game in preseason, everyone says, well, it's preseason. Cody Eakin doesn't give a crap about preseason. That's why he's bad. If William Karlsson has a bad preseason game, no one says, oh, he's not ready for the NHL.
Sure.
This is preseason. These guys don't care. Whereas Cody Glass, if he has a bad game in the preseason, it's not, well, it's preseason. Who cares? It's this kid's not ready. So Cody Eakin almost can't lose this job because no matter how bad Cody Eakin is in preseason, it's going to be chalked up to this is preseason and Cody Eakin doesn't care.
Sure. Would you give Cody Glass all 7 preseason games?
Probably.
I would.
I think I would.
Every single one.
I think you start him off on like, so they have to play a minimum of veterans, right?
Sure.
So like Carlson and Marchessault started the first game last year just for the hell of it.
Right.
I say first preseason game, give me Marchessault and Smith with Glass between them. Give me something, give me Pacioretty and Stone with Glass. Give me some combination of studs around Glass.
Give me Marchessault and Stone with Cody Glass.
Sure.
There you go.
And then as preseason goes along and as Carlson and Stasny start playing, then you move Cody Glass down into a spot that he might actually realistically play for
right.
this team and see if it's there. And if it's there and he's creating... This team's trying to win a Stanley Cup right now. This isn't about hiding waiver players. I know this team has proven they don't like to waive players.
Sure.
And the reason, who was it that asked the question?
It was Ted Krampus.
The reason Ted asked that is because this team has proven that they will waive, they will send Alex Tuch and Shea Theodore to the AHL in order to not waive Griffin freaking Reinhardt. But I think they're
great
at a different stage in the franchise right now to where if you think Cody Glass on this team gives you the best chance to win the Stanley Cup, you waive Zikov, you waive mm-hmm. Nosek, you waive somebody in order to make room because this team is built to win a cup. And if Cody Glass can help you do that, do it.
The mindset has to shift at some point in time from we have a bunch of assets that we don't want to get rid of and we want to keep compounding those assets into more assets to holy shit, we have a chance to win a Stanley Cup. We need to screw keeping the assets and cash in now. It has to. So here's...
the way your face when you read that. I can't wait for this tweet.
So there's two people sent in this question, essentially. Michaela, what about Marlo? Oh. And Derek Shane, Marlo's agent just said he is not going to the Sharks. Thoughts on him joining VGK on the third line? I guess for me, the question is, why did Patrick Marlo get traded and then bought out? Well, because he was making a ton of money yep. with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He was playing on the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that is very similar to the Golden Knights in terms of structure and skating and the way that they play a more up-tempo style, and couldn't really hack it in Toronto with probably, arguably, a deeper and more talented set of forwards.
Oh, I don't even think it's arguable.
I'm being really nice. Yeah. 1 through 12. He couldn't figure out how to produce there. And so what you're wanting me to say is Patrick Marleau a viable option for the Golden Knights on your third line? Well, if he's a left winger and if he's better than Brandon Peary, then sure, why not? Kick it around. At least Patrick Marleau is better defensively and knows how to take care of the puck, and he's been around
for a long time.
But I don't think he can play this style of hockey, and therefore it doesn't matter if he's maybe a better player than Brandon Peary. If he can't get up the ice to do anything, yeah. it's a wash.
And I think McPhee has gone away from those types of players, those slow plotting players.
Like, they don't help you.
He's gone away from them. Like, you had Neal and Perron, and they were phenomenal that first year, but McPhee clearly wasn't a fan of that style of hockey, and I don't know. Like you said it off the air. Like, if you can sign him to a Derek Englund contract where he's making no money and it's all performance based, sure. I'm not gonna hate the signing, but I also don't think they need it.
Well, and that, again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about just a few minutes ago with Tomasz Nosek. Like, if Tomasz Nosek presents himself as an option for your third line and he has gotten better and he's ready to take that next step, and then you bring in a guy like Patrick Marleau who can't get up and down the ice, who can't play the system effectively, and he starts taking away productive minutes from Tomasz Nosek in that situation, you're not any better off. You really aren't. And so it's really about the style of play, and you can get him for dirt cheap. I get it. I understand that. And he's got the leadership. He was a captain. Never mind the fact that the captaincy was stripped from him. But hey, he was still a captain for a long, long time up in San Jose, where he never won anything. I get that he's good for the room. I get that he's helped along.
This room is plenty good, though.
I know. But yeah. I get that he's helped along Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and all that. But the fact of the matter is, he couldn't play in Toronto. Toronto plays a similar structure and style to the Golden Knights with better offensive talent, and he couldn't play there.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the answer here.
I in general, I agree. I'm not going to kill them if they sign him to a cheap deal and bring him into camp and see if he's the best third line option, because that is the hole. That's sure. the hole on this team.
Sure.
If you look at this depth chart, no matter what scenario you come up with, for all you fans out there, come up with the best scenario you can think of, every single time the weakest spot on this team is going to be that third line winger. Sure. And that would fill it if you believe he can be good. So it's a cheap, proven player who fits exactly the hole you need. I'm not going to kill him if they sign him, but also at the same time, it's not like they have to go out and get him, and he's the answer to all the Golden Knights problems.
It's not the slam dunk people think it is.
Yeah.
Really. It's like the Dallas Stars taking a flyer on Corey Perry. Like, if it works out, they look great. If it doesn't, well, it's bonuses, and he's not going to hit them, and who cares? But the conventional wisdom would tell you, I don't think it's going to work out in Dallas for Corey Perry. I don't think it'd work out for Patrick Marleau in Vegas.
I agree.
Okay. Anything else you want to hit on? We've been talking for about an hour, and Frank just walked by the hallway, so I think I've got to go do show prep for the Golden Knights Insider Show.
Yeah, no, I think we've hit it all. I mean, I'm excited for this week. Our next one will be fun because we'll have hockey to break down.
We will, and we'll have comments from George McPhee. We'll have a bunch of other things to really get into. We're back with you probably once a week, every week.
Yep.
There will be a Rink Rats out. We're not going to commit to a day because Jesse's a traveling man.
Yeah. Yeah. I just have been looking at all the travel for this upcoming season. I think I'm going to go to about 25 road games. So
that's hitting, a lot, man.
That's hitting 67 to 70 of the 82 games this year.
They are going to miss you at the roller rink.
Yes, they are. I haven't played in so long. I'm like almost ready to go back. Like I'm very, when I come back from Anaheim or Irvine.
Irvine, come on, get it right, man.
I'm going to give it a go and hopefully my knee doesn't come off.
All right. Where can people find your stuff?
At Jesse Granger _ on Twitter and on The Athletic. I'm sure there's some kind of deal going on. You can
what's your sign up
40% off at the, or sorry, theathletic.com/Granger. Yeah, not at. This is not
you
Twitter.
Forgot your code.
It's been so long. I've been, when I left the country and I forgot how to do my job completely.
I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. You can catch me Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every single day on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. And you can also find us, Frank and I, every single Golden Knights game, pregame, intermission, postgame. We are your one-stop shop for all of the Golden Knights hockey games. You'll have interviews, Coach Gallant's press conference, Granger versus Gallant, part 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever we're going to get into this season. It'll be great. Thank you all for listening and subscribing and paying attention to this podcast that we do. If you haven't already, please do give us a 5-star review if you want to, and give us a review. Tell us what you think of the show on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from. But really, if you don't want to say anything at all, but you want to help us out, just leave a review of hashtag suck at Granger. Yeah, that's fine.
The reviews and the 5-star ratings really do help. Like it pushes your podcast to the top of iTunes when people search hockey or search Vegas or search Golden Knights. It really would help if people go out there and click it.
And it helps support this show. And really what we want to do this year is come up with more ways to give you guys better, more content, more in-depth content. So whatever we can do, you let us know. We're going to try to make it happen. Again, this is Rink Rats. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.